Hello and welcome back to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Nuttall, and as ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur. So Aaron, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, to be honest, Joe. Yeah, looking forward to the England versus India T20s. I mean, just one question actually, Joe, for yourself. Who do you think is going to win? If we had to put a series prediction for England versus India, five-match series, it promises to be absolutely blockbuster. Who do you think is going to win?
Honestly, I think India will win because they are playing at home. If it was in England, I'd feel a lot more confident. But I think England's downfall will be the lack of spinners. They've got Rashid and Moeen in the main squad and then Matt Parkinson in the reserves.
What about Livy?
Well, frontline spinners. So if one of those... I mean, you can argue Moeen's not even a frontline spinner then. In that case, they've got two frontline spinners, you could argue. So if one of those two gets injured, they could be in a bit of trouble, especially with the quarantine now. It's not as easy as just... you know, flying out someone else. So they could be in trouble if a spinner gets injured. But yeah, I generally think India have a better side. Plus, all of those India players, I mean, this goes without saying, it's pretty obvious, have played in India before, that in terms of they've a lot of cricket. And if you think about it, England's players, especially IPL cricket, which is more consistent than IT20, not really that many of England's players have played consistently in the IPL. So again, I think that could be one of England's downfalls. So it's going to be interesting. It will.
Absolutely. The only one thing about the squad, I mean, obviously I'd like an England win. So potentially 3-2. I think it's been very, very close. I do still think India favourites though. As you mentioned, they've got all the IPL superstars, know the conditions. Although to be fair, it is an Ahmedabad. Again, we've only really seen two tests there. So that could also play into the series as well. Only thing I will say, complete lack of Warwickshire players. Is the single one in this series.
Well, Danny Briggs could have got called up.
Should have. Or Ollie Stone could have come in. But yeah, it is what it is. Yeah. And I suppose you'll be looking out for Livy and Joss and Parky potentially.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing I don't understand with reserve players is they may as well just be in the whole squad. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I would love to see. Butler's obviously definitely going to play. I think Livingston will play in the first match. Guaranteed, I think. And then if Parky gets a game, that's great. But we'll see what happens. So, yeah, as you say, lack of Warwickshire players. I wish Wokes was in there. Like, he's been mistreated a little bit. But it is what it is. It is what it is. So we'll see how that goes. But anyway, back on track then to today's County Cricket Podcast. We are also joined today by a very special guest. I'm delighted to welcome along Durham's Graham Clark. So, Graham, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. How are you two doing?
Absolutely,
yeah, not
fine,
too bad,
Graham.
Thanks. Yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on for a bit of a cricketing chin wag tonight. Yeah, it should be a good
Definitely.
Podcast.
Absolutely. And we've got a lot of different things to be discussing. We're going to be discussing some of your early memories of cricket growing up, about your time at Durham so far, and also looking ahead into the future. And then, as ever, we will end with teammates, because you can't really beat teammates, and that is pretty classic at this point on the County Cricket Podcast. But let's get straight into it then. So, Graham, what was your first ever cricketing memory, playing, watching, anything like that?
To be honest with you, I was pretty much born into cricket. My dad played, well, still plays now. He's 16, still going strong. My mum's a level 2 coach, and I've got two older brothers, one who plays for Surrey, ex-Lancashire, and one older brother who didn't quite pursue the cricketing career, but still plays locally as well. So pretty much my earliest life memory is being down the cricket field, holding the bat, holding the ball, and playing with family and friends.
Fair play. It's a nice journey into cricket, isn't it? When it's family orientated. And yeah, you mentioned your family there. A lot of cricket influence. And of course, Jordan, Joe, you'll be very familiar with. What do you say was your highlight of Jordan? His time at Lancs.
I think the game that really sticks out. Well, actually, there's two. I mean, of course, his hat trick against Yorkshire. That was class. In my opinion, the best hat trick ever in terms of wickets that he got. And also, it was in a Roses match. And also the Roses game in the T20 that Lancs won by one run. And he came in at 4, I think. And yeah, he got like 30 odd off not many balls or something like that. That was an incredible game. That was probably the best game I've ever been to personally. So yeah, I was disappointed when he left, but that's life, innit? That's life. It is what it is. But back to yourself then, Graham. Who were some of your early cricketing idols, professional cricketing idols in those days? Who did you really look up to growing up?
I think for me, I was a bit before the 2005 Ashes. Obviously, that was a series that gripped everyone, but I was a little bit early in that when England sort of weren't as dominant in Ashes series. So I grew up watching the likes of Michael Atherton. And then the ones that really stick to me were Michael Vaughan and Marcus Trescothick. I just loved the way those two played. That series, I think it might have been 03 in Australia, where Vaughan dominated in a series where we were really poor. He stood out as our main batsman. That was sort of my first love into watching someone play and really taking note of how he went about his business. And from then, I pretty much tried to model my batting on him for a good few years until you sort of get to an age and you realise you've got to start trying to work out your own little method. And then as you get older, you sort of, people like Peterson, Ian Bell, and then Paul Collingwood, someone who I watched quite a lot, and then you go into share a dressing room with him. It's quite a surreal feeling, but those are sort of the core group of players that I watched growing up and always idolised.
Good choices. Yeah. Well,
not exactly a bad bunch, yeah. And I feel like Paul Collingwood, well, he never really gets recognition he deserves for me.
I agree.
Just in general cricketing. Terms of, we don't really ever talk about him on the podcast. And he's an absolute legend of the game. He scored so many great runs. What would you say? And took so many great wickets and took so many great catches actually as well.
Yeah, the catches were the highlight.
Yeah, what would you say, Graham, is your favourite Paul Collingwood memory? Is there one that, you know, sticks out?
That catch off Hayden's pretty iconic, isn't it? Yeah. One that, but I think, like, away from actual iconic moments, the thing that I really loved about Collie was that he's not the most skillful of players and he's not the one that everyone talks about, but he made the most of what he had and he carved a career for himself out of just sheer hard work and sheer determination. So I think that's why for someone like me, it was so good to look up to, because you realise just what hard work can do for you and what you can achieve. And that's what he did. And like you say, he's a legend of the game with what he's achieved and how many games he played for England.
Absolutely.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
And Graham, I actually wanted to just touch upon this, of course, because Paul Collingwood is an absolute icon up in the northeast of England. What is the general consensus of Paul Collingwood in Cumbria, for example, and of course at Durham? What are people's opinions and perceptions of Paul Collingwood up in the northeast?
Well, he's just Mr. Durham. Like, he's just Durham. He's pretty much been there since the start, since Durham became a first-class county. And it's almost strange now having a Durham without Paul Collingwood. It's all I've ever known. It's all pretty much most of the lads that have played there have known. And he's just an absolute legend. I mean, to carry on playing for as long as he did after playing for England, you see some people not necessarily lose interest, but he was still going to the gym at 40, trying his hardest just to be the best he could. He gave everything to that club. And yeah, it's not quite the same without him here, but he's just Durham through and through. And I think the fans and the members and even the players, they miss him. And we just wish he could have went on forever, but obviously that's impossible. But you know, he's left his mark and people still aspire to be him. He's still just the name that people want to achieve. He's sort of the poster boy that you've got to work as hard as him. You've got to try and achieve what he did. And it's pretty good bar to try and follow.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And as I said, I personally don't feel like he gets enough of enough cricketing recognition. You know, even in, a bit more recent now, I think he was still playing during, at the time of this game, the Lords Bicentenary match. And he got runs in that, you know, and that's obviously more recent. But even then, you know, talent-wise, you had ridiculous players. And as you say, he worked hard. And even in a game that, in the grand scheme of things, just didn't matter. It was a bit of fun. And he was still, you know, one of the best players on the day. So, an absolute legend. But I don't think he has any kind of, like, a stand named after him or a statue.
No, he does not. He does have a stand now.
So he does.
Paul Collingwood Pavilion.
Well, there you go.
He luckily got it presented to him while he was still playing. I think it was his last season. And they honoured him in that way, which is rightly so. I mean,
yeah.
There's no other player that's given as much to the county of Durham than he has. So... luckily he did get the recognition he deserved, and I'm pretty sure that's not going to be beaten or taken away from him anytime soon.
No chance.
No, without doubt.
What do you think about having a Mark Wood end or a Mark Wood stand one day and a Ben Stokes stand?
I think, well, Ben Stokes might get one.
And a statue. I mean,
thing is, the England boys play that much now. They don't really get much of a chance to play for Durham, so
yeah,
they might not have the same impact on the club that Collie might have, because he still played a lot during his time for England as well. But I mean, if they came back and played for Durham for 5-6 years after their career, I'm sure they'd have a stand or a statue somewhere around the ground.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Well, that's the thing as well, because maybe not Mark Wood because of how fast he bowls. May not be able to last as long in terms of his playing career, but Ben Stokes, you could definitely see playing for you know, until he's pushing 40, because he's that kind of player. And whether he's still playing international cricket by then, who knows? He's, as I say, that kind of player who really could be at that age. But yeah, I mean, you never know. And you mentioned there, actually, England players nationwide don't get to play for their counties as much. I remember Mark Wood actually played against Lancs in the first T20 of last season of 2020 when Keaton Jennings got that really, really good 100. And he was just bowling so quick. It was, yeah, like, I mean, I assume it was cold. I've been to Durham once and it's freezing. So I assume it was cold. And yeah, it wouldn't have been nice if that like hit you on the arm or something or in the ribs. So yeah, seriously, seriously good player.
That spelly ball, that game as well, was probably one of the first times I've stood a point actually scared as well, because I thought, if the batter hits this, it's flying at you.
Yeah.
And Keaton, Al Davis actually played him so well. Those two in that game were amazing. And Keaton went on to obviously get one of the better T20-100s you'll see, especially against attack like that, because we had Bryden Cass as well, who doesn't bowl slow.
Yeah.
No. There, and they played him so well. But yeah, I mean, Woody was born the speed of light.
Yeah, as he always does, let's be honest, as he always does.
Bowls heat. Yeah. And you love to see it, don't really you? What a character and what a player. Absolute gun seamer. But we've spoken a lot here about county cricket, Graham. What do you say were your first ever memories of county cricket in general? I'm guessing there would have been a Durham connection. But what was your first ever memory? Do you have one specific memory that you can draw upon, per se?
There's no real memory. So being from Cumbria, where I was, it was quite secluded from county cricket. It didn't get the coverage it probably deserved back then. So my actual earliest memories of county cricket were playing cricket captain on the PC. That's the first time I'd ever... Exactly. It's the first time I'd ever associated any sort of county players. I almost didn't realise there was a system below England. I just sort of... You saw these England players and you didn't realise what was beneath them. And then you start looking at the local teams. Well, who's nearest to us? And it was Lancashire, Yorkshire and Durham. So you start playing a few seasons with those guys and look at the players and you start to associate. And then as you get a little bit older, the opportunity comes to go and watch those games. And a lot of my friends who played cricket were Lancashire supporters. It was either usually Lancashire or Durham. So it's going to sound cheesy because I play for them now, but I thought, I'm going to be a bit different and I'm going to support Durham. And then my first memory was getting to watch a Lancashire v Durham T20 at the Riverside. And I think that must have been pretty much the first season T20 cricket had started. And then you're getting to see people like Mal Loy, Dale Benkenstein, all these players that you've sort of played with on the PC, and you're getting to see them play now. And that was pretty much my first memory of county cricket. And then it wasn't a few years after that until I started seeing a bit of first class cricket and sort of started taking note of scores and seeing who was doing what.
Can I just say that has to be the most unique pathway into county cricket I think we've had here on the podcast. Yeah, I played cricket captain and started watching county cricket. Absolutely brilliant, Graham. And in the same vein, I suppose, did you ever play Brian Lara? That was a brilliant game, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But you could just hit off a square leg every ball, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Trying to get less than 20 balls.
Too easy.
What a game, though. What an iconic franchise of games, Brian Lara cricket, in particular 96. That's a really, really good one. You can play that for free as well, I believe, on Google. Yeah, as I said, very, very unique. And I suppose we have to touch upon Cumbria, because Cumbria, of course, do play minor county cricket. So, Graham, we've actually mentioned this on the podcast before. Joe, obviously, you're a big advocate of this idea, the quote-unquote cricketing FA Cup. Would you be in favour of producing a tournament which would allow minor counties, such as Cumbria, for example, Cheshire, which is Joe's county, a county like Staffordshire, the Welsh minor counties... Would you be in favour of actually creating a tournament which allows these teams to play the likes of Durham, Lancs, Warwickshire, Sussex, Surrey, whoever? What are your thoughts on that, Graham?
Absolutely. I think it'd be only good for the game. I think there's a lot of talent in those places that you don't really get to see that often. And there's people who probably just miss the board and are lucky not to be playing professional cricket. And I think if they get that exposure of playing against a first-class county or a bigger county, then you might just unearth a new player out of nowhere, really. But it's also a great occasion for a local cricketer who then gets to go and play at a first-class ground who maybe never get that opportunity before that. So I think it can only be good for the game. The only downside is whether counties would put out a full-strength side or they'd start playing a few younger and have kind of like the FA Cup when people don't put out the full-strength side, whether that would have that ring to it and it only gets serious when it gets sort of to the quarterfinals. But personally, I think coming from Cumbria, I'd have loved that opportunity to have played for them against a county before you get recognised.
It would be interesting. And Joe, obviously, I want to know your thoughts. Please just enlighten us again, because this was something that you kind of came up with, not in terms of the original idea, but like an FA Cup structure. I'm guessing you'd also be in favour of that. Would you go and watch Cheshire versus Lancs, for example?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I think that'd be very, like, a very interesting thing. You know, as Graham said, really, it kind of gives that almost pathway for people who just missed out maybe on professional cricket, that pathway into playing full professional cricket. And it's great for local. There's a lot of secluded counties, realistically, who don't have a first-class county near them. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. I'm terrible at the geography, so I honestly can't. But I'm sure that, well, I know for a fact there will be some that are secluded and haven't, supporters who haven't had the chance regularly to see first-class games. You know, I think we should count ourselves lucky, Aaron. I know that we've not been to our respective grounds in a while, but we have the opportunity to go and see regular county cricket.
And so close as well, yeah.
Exactly, professional sport at the end of the day. And some people aren't as fortunate in a cricketing aspect, maybe. So, you know, it gives those sort of supporters a great chance to see maybe a local derby. It's obviously a bit of a large area, but it's still technically a local derby. So I think that's another benefit of it. So I do personally think it's a good idea.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it? And we spoke with Ed Barnard about this, didn't we, with Shropshire. They were the example, because in the 80s, they beat a couple of first-class counties, which is incredible. They beat Geoffrey Boycott's Yorkshire in the, I think it was the NatWest Trophy in the 80s. So it would be interesting. I personally would love to see it. I really would. Obviously, Warwickshire have very close connections with Staffordshire, for example. I've had guys like Alex Thompson, Alex Miller, those guys have come through the ranks at Staffordshire. So each county does have these affinities and connections. And you mentioned there about a local derby. Imagine an FA Cup-style tournament and you have Cornwall versus Devon. I think that'd be quite a nice one because, as you said, those supporters may not have the opportunity to regularly travel up to Taunton, for example, or Bristol, or go across to Hampshire. So yeah, it would be interesting. And of course, we'll have to, I suppose, dive deeper into that in a later podcast, Joe. But back onto yourself, Graham. Let's talk a bit more about Durham, of course, the main focus of today's podcast. What do you remember from your debut for Durham? What were you feeling on the day? What was the occasion like? What do you draw from that particular day, per se?
I was a bag of nerves, to be honest. I found out the night before that I was going to play. Unfortunately, Keaton Jennings had a bit of a tough spell. So I came in and got told I was going to be opening the batting, which isn't something I usually do in red ball cricket, but I was obviously so excited. But then you get to the ground and got my cap presented to me by Paul Collingwood, which again is a huge moment. Like, yeah, you stood there, this guy's saying some really nice words to you, and it's someone that you've grew up watching on the TV, and you're about to go and play a game for him, which was pretty special. And then I can remember you just want to get out there once you're sort of warming up and starting to get the feel of the day. You just want to get started because you're just that eager and that tense, and the adrenaline's pumping. And luckily, we did bat first, and it didn't quite go to plan, but it was just nice to get out there and sort of face a few balls, because I think if we'd fielded first, I'd have just been stewing on it for a day and a half, and like I say, I'd have been exhausted by the time I got back, so I'd just been nervous for the whole time.
Absolutely, yeah. We spoke about this in the past, isn't it? It's a nice way to calm the nerves when, in particular, as a batsman or as a bowler, you get the opportunity to do your craft first and, you know, kind of settle into the rhythm, I suppose. And also, Graham, I wanted to touch upon your T20 debut. What do you remember about that particular day?
Not an awful lot, to be honest. I can remember it was at Leicester, and again, it didn't quite go to plan. Just again, a bag of nerves, to be honest. You know, it's something that you built up your whole career, your whole life. You want to become a professional cricketer, and then you finally get in this moment to sort of showcase your skills. And then you kind of realize, like, this is what I've worked towards. And suddenly, the weight of the world comes on you, and you're starting to feel all this pressure. And you start doubting yourself, and you just think, I just want to get one away. And I can remember, I think I had a couple of dot balls and started feeling a lot of pressure straight away because I was thinking, I'm in this team to try and take it to the opposition bowlers, try and score quickly. And suddenly I felt a bit of pressure, and I luckily got one boundary away, and then got a bit ahead of myself and tried a big swing and missed one and lost all my three stumps, I think. So again, didn't quite go to plan, but it was still a special moment, something you're still wanting to achieve. And you almost sit down afterwards and think, if I just took a breath, I'd have been all right there. But it's over before you know it, and you realise now I've batted and wasted a chance.
All three stumps.
I seem to have a knack when I bat, stumps go out the ground a lot. They never just seem to fall over. They go cartwheeling, and it's demoralising. You look back and you just see them pegged 20 yards back, and you think, yes.
Imagine. Yeah, I thought you were going to say off stump cartwheeling or something like that. All three just stumps all over the shop, to say the least. But Graham, obviously you've been at Durham since 2015 in terms of your professional career. Looking back, what do you say has been your real highlight? What do you say has been your proudest moment up at the Riverside so far?
I think as a whole, the 2017 season, which was a difficult year for the club, after getting obviously relegated, we lost a lot of our best players. So then having quite a bit of responsibility to score some runs because we'd lost that many players. In difficult circumstances, being docked so many points, just sort of taking a bit of responsibility and having quite a good year all around in all three formats was quite pleasing, really. And looking back on that season now, I don't think if we actually played a lot of good cricket and if we weren't docked the points, I actually think we would have been pretty successful. We lost a lot of four-day games sort of chasing the wind because draws were irrelevant to us. Draws were never going to sort of impact us on the table. So we needed to win almost every game. And we lost a few by one wicket in the last session. I think we maybe lost three games or drew a couple as well, just trying to chase the win, which made the season look worse than probably where it actually was because we played some good cricket. And the same in the One Day Cup, we just missed out by one game again. And if we hadn't been docked the 2 points in that, we would have qualified. But I mean, we probably should have won. We got ourselves into two good positions against Worcester and Lancashire in that season to qualify. So to have those points holding us back and still compete and being sort of part of that side was quite, looking back now, quite a proud one. But even at the time, it didn't feel like it because we were still in Division Two and weren't where we wanted to be back in Division One.
And I suppose we have to touch upon that because in the podcast, we do also touch upon the tougher moments because, as we all know, cricket is a roller coaster game. We have peaks and troughs. It's as simple as that. But I suppose we have to talk about 2016 because it is one of the most probably extraordinary events, in particular in recent county cricket, with Durham having that financial bailout from the ECB. So, Graham, what's going through the camp at the time? What's going through in the squad? What's the mood like in the dressing room in 2016?
Well, to be honest with you, that was something that we never really knew of, and it was nothing we ever considered. I can remember I just actually got into the team at the back end of that season, and we beat Surrey at home to secure our place in Division One for the next season. So I can remember the lads were absolutely delighted. It was a real tense game, and there was only one game after that. So it was a must-win fixture for us to avoid relegation. So winning that game and then actually going on to win the next game as well to finish fourth, like the guys were on top of the world. Like we were absolutely buzzing to finish fourth in a season where we potentially could have got relegated. We were absolutely delighted. And then I think a week after the season finished, we got the news and it was just, there was a lot of confusion really. We didn't really understand why or what had happened. And then to hear we were getting relegated and then getting docked points as well to almost secure us not coming straight back up. It was quite a tough pill to swallow and a bit demoralizing. I don't think at the time I actually realized the impact it would have had on the club. And obviously players on their futures as well, because people who are aspiring to play for England don't want to be playing in Division Two. So it was almost those factors you don't consider as well. And like the supporters, like who have been there, we were quite successful for the 10 years prior to this. We won a few championships. We won the One Day Cup once, and we were really building again to sort of push for a title the next few years. And then to have that sort of taken away from us and then to lose our players, it was almost like a double down. So after that, we were pretty flat for quite a while. But that winter, we still tried to build it up as if we were going to do something special the next year. Yes, we're docked 48 points. We're going minus 48, but we're going to be that team that's going to overcome that and still try and get promoted. And that was the goal. So even though it was a, looking back now, it was a mountain you just couldn't climb, at the time we thought we're going to try and do something special. And that was the sort of inspiration, the fight that got us through that winter to try and go and play some good cricket the next year.
Well, that's very, very interesting to hear because, as I mentioned, it was extraordinary, wasn't it? It came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
I mean, the fans really didn't have an idea. Joe, what do you remember about it at the time? Because it did come as a shock, didn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, like Durham were, as you said, Graham, Durham had gone through a period of real success over the last, like, 10 years. As you mentioned, championship wins, white ball wins.
Beating us in the One Day Cup, 2014. Yeah.
And, you know, it must have come as a real big shock. I know from a neutral perspective, it did. And obviously, Keaton Jennings left that year. Borthwick left that year. He's obviously back now. Stoneman left. You know, so they're three massive players who've left as a result of this. And as you say, you were building towards something. That's your top three, and they've all gone. And you know, you're building towards something, and it's just gone like at the blink of an eye. So, I mean, it was kind of quite unclear, really. Like in the media, obviously, it would have been more clear in private. And it was quite unclear in the media, so that obviously relayed to confusion for fans, or certainly for me, it did at least. So, yeah, it was so unfortunate. And as you say, to have survived as you did, well, not even survived, you came fourth, and then you know you kind of are relegated like that. And then to have that mentality still in the winter that you can still go up, and to me that shows, you know, at that time how passionate Durham were and how relentless Durham were and still are, and that really shows to me that, you know, the fact that you still are not giving up. Because I was actually going to say, did you almost feel like resigned to defeat at the start of the winter and at the start of the season? But you just literally said there, no. You know, that just shows to me the relentlessness and such a good attitude of Durham.
I think a lot of credit for that has to go to Collie as well. I mean, he was such a level head during the whole thing. And he was the guy that would come in, he'd come into the gym in the morning and be like, lads, I can see it now, like BBC's team of the year, it's going to be yours because we're going to get promoted after getting minus 48 points. And he'd be there building everyone up, and you'd almost feel inspired going into your training session and think, right, I'm going to make myself the best I can be now because I want to do this for him, because he was so optimistic about the whole thing. And but he was so calm, and it may have affected him massively because it was the club that he loved that's been relegated, but he didn't show that. And he just said, look, we're getting us back into Division One. And that was his attitude throughout the whole winter, which obviously it did inspire us. But then after sort of five or six games the following season, we didn't get many wins. You sort of realised this is a tough ask.
Absolutely. Yeah, and definitely. And for those who don't know exactly what happened in 2016, we've already mentioned the 48-point deduction. I actually wrote all of the steps down here. In addition to that, of course, the Riverside no longer had test status. That was stripped immediately. Of course, Durham, they got that £3.85 million financial aid package, which was from the ECB. But in addition to that as well, you mentioned or alluded to it, Graham, as well, the four-point penalty in the T20 Blast and the two-point deduction in the One Day Cup as well. So it wasn't just 2016. 2017 was pretty much a write-off in many, many ways. And I just wanted to ask, in a way, do you think that Durham have actually bounced back since then? Or are you still trying to find your feet in county cricket? What are your thoughts on that per se?
I think we're still trying to find our feet. I think it's taken its toll on us a little bit. Like I said, that year, 2017, we actually played some pretty good cricket. I think the following year for us was pretty disappointing, going back onto a level playing field and not being able to try to replicate our performances from the season before. And we just haven't quite been that team that we once were. I think I know a lot of players always say about their own team, but I really do think we are building towards that now. New coaching staff in, we've brought in quite a few players. The squad is looking a lot more experienced now than what it once did. I mean, in 2018, you take Collingwood out of that team, and then the average age was pretty young. So we've brought in a few players now that are quite experienced and are sort of stabilising that batting order. So I think now is probably the chance where we can start to leave our mark on the championship again, which we haven't done in the last few years.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we will talk about the championship in a minute, but just on that actually as well, obviously Durham kind of went through a bit of a rebrand almost, 2 years ago now. You know, you're obviously, well, before that, I'm trying to think of your T20 name, your white ball name in Jets. Before the Jets. That's it. I knew it was something like that. It's on the tip of my tongue. And then obviously he changed to the Jets and kind of had a bit of a rebrand there. And now I feel, again, the whole almost branding of the club has gone on a bit of an overhaul. You've gone to, you know, more traditional colours of yellow and blue. And I feel like that is kind of, we've seen that, you know, a few times in county cricket, and that's had a positive impact, if anything, just psychologically. And, you know, I think, well, we've seen that this year at Leicester. Obviously, nobody knows how that's going to go because we've not had the season yet, but we've seen that this year at Leicester. And obviously 2020, I think we can pretty much just write off for anyone because it's not really a normal year. So, you know, I think that as well is kind of positive, you know, kind of going to more traditional colours and an overhaul of the branding and things. So, yeah, I think it's very exciting at Durham. And as you say, the squad has got a lot more experience now. Obviously, I mentioned there's Scott Borthwick coming back. That, to me, that's just going to be massive because he's a great, great player. Obviously, he's had England experience to a certain extent, and he's a class player. So yeah, for me, that's a brilliant bit of business.
Absolutely. And just touching upon Scott, obviously, Graham, what's he been like? I mean, has he been? He must have been happy to be back. He's back in his home county.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's like he's never left now. He's been back out of the winter, and it's almost like he's never been away, and he's fitted right back in. And you can see he's so excited to get going again now. I think it's going to mean a lot to him representing Durham this time around. And he's just been announced as captain as well, so he's got a bit more responsibility, which I think he'll cope with no problem at all. But when he left, he was consistently scoring 1,000 runs a season for us. And that's, you take that out of the team, and it's a huge loss. So to get that back and to get that experience, it's only going to benefit us. And I think now as a squad, we're starting to really feel confident, and I hope that he can be the sort of the forefront of that.
That's good.
Yeah.
And I imagine that Durham fans listening to today's podcast will be taking that very, very nicely. Music to the ears, as they say, not to sound too cliche. But before we talk about 2021 and beyond, because I do want to touch upon the squad, of course, got some exciting players up at the Riverside heading into this season. Who'd you say, Graham, has been the toughest bowler that you've ever faced in county cricket? Is there one that you've really, really struggled against? What are your thoughts on that?
There's a few that's like, you can sort of say are quite relative to your level of experience. So when you first break into the team, you face it and you realise the step up then. So I can remember when my first few games facing Ryan Sidebottom, and just thinking his level of skill was just something I'd never come across before. He'd never give you a bad ball. He was swinging the ball in and always challenging your inside edge. But then he'd ball one that would go across you and try and find the outside edge as well. But the one ball that stands out for me would be Mohammed Abbas. When he played at
Leicester. That was actually a bad choice.
When he played at Leicester, he was bowling downhill with about a 90-mile-an-hour gale force wind behind him, and he bowled us out in a day and a half twice. I mean, I think if we'd have batted six times in that, we still wouldn't have posted him on 100. He was almost impossible to play. It felt like he was bowling 90-mile-an-hour and moving it as much as a spinner. I can still remember him getting me out at LBW, and I went back to watch the footage, and I could have had three bats and I still would have missed it. It was just, honestly, it was just the most ridiculous ball I've ever faced. And I hope I don't have to face him ever again, to be honest.
Well, he's back in county cricket, isn't he, this season?
Yeah, as I say, he's down at the Aegeus Bowl now, isn't he?
Yeah,
he is.
So something to look forward to for Hampshire fans, that's for sure. Maybe not for opposition batsmen, but...
I know, that front three, Abbott, Abbas, Keith Barker as well. Oh my word, I do not envy these batsmen facing those three.
Very, very good. Very, very good. And Graham, I do have to ask actually as well about your experiences of facing your brother, Jordan. Have you had that chance much? And if so, how do you think that went?
It's happened, we've played against each other a few times, but actually facing him only happened once, I think, off the top of my head. It's for one over, and luckily I got him away for a couple of boundaries, which was nice. I could hear mum and dad cheering in the crowd as well, so I think they were on my side more than his. but it's honestly such a surreal feeling playing against him, because like, this is a guy I've grew up watching. I used to travel the country when I was a kid watching him play his county stuff, and I always wanted to do well. And even when playing against him, you still want to do well. As much as you want to win, you still want to do well, want him to do well. And an ideal scenario would be he would take a few wickets, he'd score loads of runs, and then we'd still win. That was kind of always wanted to do every time I played against Lancashire. But like, we both know it's part of the job. We're both professionals. At the end of the day, he's bowling at me, I'm a batsman. Like, we're not brothers at that time. And as soon as we get off the field, it's just like nothing's happened again. But it's something you can't really describe once you're facing him. Well, what he did as well, what he likes to do is he's a bit of a wind-up merchant. So he knew how nervous I'd be, and he was just there running the ball, and he was pulling faces and stuff, trying to put me off, because it's an easier game for him. So luckily it didn't work, and I managed to get away for a few, but he did end up catching me out that game as well.
I was just about to say, I think he caught you out. That was the game where Durham won in the last over, wasn't it? And
it was, yeah, where Lane Dravaskis bought, I think it was like a triple wicket maiden almost.
Yeah. I think it was like two runs off the over, yeah. And I was just about to say, I seem to remember that he caught you, but it's crazy. I just say it's a bit of a, must be pretty surreal experience, really playing against him. So
once we killed him as well, like obviously he caught me out. So when I was fielding, I kept thinking, I hope he doesn't hit one to me, because it would kill me to catch him. I wouldn't want it, even though you know you have to do it. I really wouldn't want to do that, because I still want him to do well. But luckily now he's in the South group. We don't get to see much of each other playing wise, so I can just be a fan from afar.
Well, fair enough. I mean, if that's in that case, you can still want it to do well, and then it not affects how Durham do. So yeah, I think that's fair enough. But let's look ahead then to 2021, because obviously there's been a total overhaul really of Red Bull cricket. We've kind of alluded to T20 and South Group there, but there's been a total overhaul of Red Bull cricket. Firstly, what are your opinions on that? Because it's so different to how it normally is. Are you in favour of that? And secondly, what are your thoughts on your group? Because I think every group is equally as tough. And just for the listeners at home, I'm sure you probably know your group. But for the listeners at home, in Durham's group are Derbyshire, Essex, Nottinghamshire, Worcestershire and Warwickshire. So as I say, I think every group is equally as tough. But you've got the champions, Essex, in there. So yeah,
and the champions to be as well, let's not forget.
Durham. I don't see Lancs in there.
This is the problem when we all have our own different county affiliations, isn't it? We just all mention our different counties.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, Graham, what do you make of the new structure heading into 2021 and potentially beyond, of course?
To be honest with you, I quite like it. It's something a little bit different. And I'm a big believer that no matter what the structure is, the best team generally will win. The longer the format, the better team usually wins, unlike T20 where someone can have a day out and win a game for a slightly poorer side. So I think a change in structure might only be a good thing. It's you get to go and play in different places, like you attracting fans from different areas to go and see different grounds. And just sort of almost sort of broadens the horizons a little bit for players, for spectators. And look, it might not work. It might not, but I think it's worth a try because last season seemed to go okay in terms of the structure of that. So you give it a go and see how it pans out, which I think it'll be good because, like I said, the best team are still, or the best six teams that will still end up in the top division. And like it's only a good thing for cricket if people are getting to play against other players that they wouldn't normally play against.
Good point.
Exactly. Because as I say, Essex, the champions of the Bob Willis Trophy and the County Championship, are in your group. And I don't know when the last time you would have played them is, but it obviously won't have been for a few years. So it just on the face of things, just that is mixing things up. Obviously didn't play Worcester or Warwickshire last year because they were in a different group as well. So, I mean, as you say, it gives sides a great opportunity to play against sides they may not have played for a long time. It will be interesting. But I'll tell you what, it is a long drive from Durham to Essex. Yeah.
We defer the fixture. But another thing on that, which I think is quite good as well, is sometimes in Division 2, you get a really strong side. I mean, look at that Lancashire side of 2019. I think they really would have competed in Division 1.
Yeah, but definitely, yeah.
But you'd never know because you never get the opportunity to play against those teams. So I think now, like I said, all 18 counties, if someone plays good cricket throughout the whole season,
anyone can win it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And right so, and then the best team will win. And it would be a shame to see a real strong side be restricted only to Division 2, where now I think it's a good chance for everyone to really showcase themselves.
That's a good point. That's a very, very good point. And I suppose, Graham, in that group, of course, there's my cat of Warwickshire, our eternal rivals, Worcestershire, the defending champions, Essex, of course. Who are you most looking forward to taking on in Group 1?
Well, I think you've always got to look towards the champions, haven't you? I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not sure how involved I'll be in the Red Bull stuff to start the year with the batting line that we have. But as a squad, I think you always want to look at the champions and sort of compare yourselves to them and see where they are and where you are in comparison. So that would always be a good fixture. But then getting to play Edgbaston and Trent Bridge are always pretty special fixtures. They're always ones you look out for. Really iconic grounds and always tough opposition. So to be honest, there's not really a bad fixture in amongst there. I think you're going to be looking at all of them and each team is going to be coming at you hard. I mean, there's no easy fixture. You look at even Derbyshire last year, we're on a great run. Leicestershire made a lot of signs as well in their group. So there's no pushovers now. There's no easy game. So I think everyone that you play, you've got to be on your best to try and win.
100%. And you look at the signings this season as well. Got so many brilliant players coming to county cricket. We really have. I mean, we're very, very privileged to have the overseas or multiple overseas slots, depending on the format, here in England and Wales. And Graham, I just wanted to touch upon Durham's business from this season. Okay, of course, bringing in Cameron Bancroft, that was announced today. What are your opinions on bringing him back to the Riverside? How big of an influence has he been in the Durham dressing room?
Yeah, he's going to be massive. He's such a calming presence in amongst the squad. And he's so good to learn off because there's no person who's been through any tougher situations in cricket than Cameron Bancroft through what he's been through. So he's really level-headed, and he's so good at just keeping calm in any situation. And the season that we had him in 2019, he was brilliant because he didn't start off as well as he would have liked, but he just kept saying, "I know I'm playing well. I'm getting a score soon." And that was, to see that confidence and that belief in himself was amazing, really. And then he went out and started scoring bucket loads of runs.
And got in the Ashes squad.
Exactly, yeah. And doing that after not having, I think the first two games he was pretty quiet, but then to do that and just trust himself and earn that Ashes call, rightly so as well. But yeah, I mean, again, just having someone who can score that volume of runs is always going to benefit any squad. But it's the time he spends with everyone else in the squad, the other batters as well, we can learn from him. So even if he doesn't perform as well as he would like, he's going to offer so much more to all the other batters as well. It's going to drag our standards up. So yeah, it's a great signing for us. And hopefully he can score as many as he did last time. But if not, he'll still improve everyone else around him.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And in terms of that Durham squad heading into this season, and of course beyond, have got some very, very good young players, I must admit, up in the northeast. Who do you say that not even just Durham fans, but county cricket fans in general should be looking at in terms of a young upcoming player? Who do you really pinpoint for this season?
I don't know if you'd still call him young, but Bryden Carse is still such an exciting player.
He's a good one, isn't he?
he bowls 90 mile an hour, and I've never seen someone hit a ball so cleanly as well. He hits the ball miles. So in all three formats, he's going to make a huge impact. I mean, probably not the 50 over stuff because he's going to be in the 100, but watching him play is, it's just frightening how good he actually is. And I don't know if he knows how good he is yet as well. So I think once he realises that and he'll excel, he's going to be one of the better players going, and it wouldn't surprise me to push for higher honours in a few years' time. So I think he's the one really to look out for. If we can keep him fit, he's going to be a big player for us.
Yeah, I do like Bryden Carse. I must admit, been brilliant for the Lions as well. Had a very, very good tour against Australia back in, I think that was actually 2020. That might have been the start of 2020. But I also wanted to know your thoughts on Matthew Potts, because I actually got asked a question about him the other day in terms of like what people can expect to see from him. That was asked by someone who obviously hasn't seen a lot of Matthew Potts. But what do you make him as an upcoming cricketer?
Yeah, he's an exciting talent. He hasn't probably had as much opportunity in the red ball stuff as he would have liked. But again, when you've got people like Chris Rushworth and Ben Rain ahead of you, that those guys who do it year in, year out, they're quite hard to break into. But in terms of his white ball stuff, he took the responsibility of being the main bowler last year, and he did it so well, taking the new ball up top and then bowling to death, bowling the hardest overs and coming away with pretty economical figures and taking wickets as well. It's a tough ask for a bowler, and he did it so well. So I think he's an exciting player, and he's such a professional the way he goes about his business. He's one of the hardest trainers you'll see. And you can just see he wants to get better and he wants to get better. So don't be surprised if he sort of really shines in the 100 this year and shines in the Blast when he plays for us as well.
And he scored lengths out as well at Old Trafford.
I was about to bring that up. Funnily enough. Yeah, that's the most memorable Matthew Potts performance. He is a good young player. I do quite like Matthew Potts. Yeah, and of course, for Durham fans, exciting times as well.
Yeah, he's a wicket-taking bowler. I think he got three for... He got career best figures three matches in a row for us last year. Just kept ripping through top orders of teams, which gave us a real chance of qualifying in the T20. So, and he led the attack all the way through, and he loved the responsibility as well. He always wanted the ball. And even in the field, he wants to be in the hot spots in the field. He wants to be there trying to take the catches, getting the run-outs. And we haven't seen it yet, but he actually can hit a long ball as well when required on. So he's definitely talented in all three forms of the three aspects of the game.
Yeah, oh, I can't disagree with that at all. I mean, I think I've made it pretty evident there. I do quite like Matthew Potts as a young player in county cricket. And I alluded to there beforehand with regards to the Durham fans. We haven't really spoken about the Durham faithful up at the Riverside. But how big of a boost will they be in 2021 once we all come back eventually to stadiums, Graham? How excited are you to see the Durham fans back at the Riverside?
It's massive to me. It's huge because, I mean, Durham's such a big ground. So when it's empty, it feels empty. You notice it's there. You can hear a pin drop. So to get the fans back in, it's going to be huge for us. And to be honest, even in red ball cricket, we do really well. Like, the fans turn up for red ball cricket. It's surprising to see the numbers that we do get. And then the 2020 is growing every year as well. We're getting some good numbers in for that. So it's almost like a cliche and you see it in football, but it's almost like a 12-man for you. You get that once they start getting behind you and start cheering for you, you know, you get that lift and you get that boost and you want to perform for them. So It's only going to be a benefit to us if they're there watching and cheering on.
100%. 100%. And was that weird last season? Because at Durham, for those who don't know, when the players actually walk out, you walk almost arm to arm with the fans. Was that weird walking down and that being completely empty?
It almost just felt like every game was a practice match. You know, like hearing just dead silence when you're walking out and like being able to play a game and you can just hear each other in the field. It's just a surreal feeling. It's something that you're not really... It's like going back to sort of county junior cricket when you're playing it through the week and no one was there because everyone was at work and stuff. And that's what it felt like again. And it was quite good for the first two games because it was something a bit different. And then you really missed the fans after that. And you, obviously this year now, it's going to be huge to get them back in.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And obviously myself and Jers fans, we can't wait either. It's been far too long. 23rd of September 2019. That was the last time I watched Warwickshire in a county championship match against Yorkshire. It's been far too long, but of course, fingers crossed, remain optimistic heading into this year that we will be allowed back. But of course, Graham, before we move on to today's teammate segment, which of course we've got some absolutely brilliant questions for today, actually some pretty outside of the box ones. What do you say your future aspirations with Durham? What are you looking to achieve from a personal perspective heading into not only this season, but of course beyond that as well?
Personally, I'd like to try and get myself back into the Red Bull team. Something I've never quite nailed down. Like had some really bad runs at it as well. 3, 4, 5 games without even getting double figures. So to try and sort of force my way back into that team and become a bit more consistent and then try and win a trophy. Ideally, you want to win a championship, but to try and win a T20 or a one day trophy would be huge. Playing for the same club for most of my career, you want to try and give something back and win something for the fans and the members. So to win a trophy would be huge as well. But on a personal level, it's just become a bit more of a constant presence in the team in all three formats.
Yeah. And where do you see your best position to bat in Red Bull cricket? Is there one place you feel most comfortable batting?
I'd say it's probably more middle order. Like I say, I started my career up in the batting, which was, I was like a fish out of water, really. I struggled with that massively. And it took me a while to sort of get over that trauma of failing at the top level. So I would say I'm a middle order player. Being more white ball predominant, I find it a little bit easier when the ball's a bit older, coming in and sort of playing a bit more of a natural game and a bit more attacking than a traditional sort of 4-day player. So ideally 4, 5, 6 is where I'd like to be. But like I said, at the minute, we've made some really good signings and got some really good first-class cricketers here who are well ahead of me. So it's going to take a bit of time to sort of force my way back into that.
Yeah. Well, we both wish you the best of luck with that, Graham. And yeah, fingers crossed you have a good season this year. So let's get into teammates then. You know how it works. Just for those at home listening, in case you don't. Basically, we're going to ask Graham 10 or so questions to do with his Durham teammates and see what the relevant answer is. So let's get straight into it then. The first one is, who has the best nickname in the Durham dressing room?
The best nickname? See, the nickname is kind of going out of the game a little bit. Everyone just sort of gets the surname with a Y in the end, like for example, Clark at the time. But the one that stands out for me is Ben Rain gets called Mashy. And it's a stupid story. Basically what it was is, as you know, as cricketers, you get your fat tests taken regularly, sort of pre-season, at the end of the season, see where you are with that. And we had ours come up in a few weeks' time, and Ben wasn't worried, but he's like, I'm going to get my head on and really sort of focus on my diet. And for some reason, in his head, he thought it'd be a good idea to bring in mashed potato every single day for his lunch. And all it was just in a Tupperware box of mashed potato. And the lads couldn't believe it. Like, that was his genius idea, and now he's going to lose some weight. So Mashy from there just stuck, and I think it's going to stay with him forever now.
Wait, just mashed potato, nothing else, just mashed potato in Tupperware?
There was days when there was just mashed potato. Sometimes he had a bit of chicken in there as well, but yeah, loves mashed potato.
Well, there we go. We learned something on tonight's podcast. Did not know that at all. And as you said, it's a unique one. It's better than just rainy, isn't it?
Yeah. We did have another guy, Josh Coghlan, who just left. He's a very similar story, and he got called Beansy. So I'll let you figure out that one.
Yeah. I can't quite guess the food for that one. It's a bit more difficult. Moving on to our next one, though, Graham. This one always seems to bring out a smile in our guests. Who's the teacher's pet up at Durham? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
The tough one, isn't it? You have to throw someone under the bus here. Probably got a couple you could mention. Alex Lees, sometimes you think he's part of the coaching staff, he's around that much. You sometimes wonder if he's a player or a coach. He seems to be around a lot. Matty Potts as well was another that I come to mind, but that's probably just jealousy from me because he's such a model professional. So you call him a teacher's pet because he's that good at what he does. But I think he'll kill me for saying it, but yeah, Alex Lees would be the one, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he sees himself as a coach after his retirement. Maybe he's very early on starting to morph into that role.
Very early.
Well, yeah, it is exceptionally early, but yeah, we'll have to see with that one. The next one, who is the best at karaoke?
Oh, no question about it. Cameron Steele. You wouldn't say it's a traditional karaoke song. He does Insomnia by Faithless.
You're kidding.
And it gets the crowd going. It gets them hyped. It's honestly, it's a sight to behold. And I've never seen it not pay off. Everyone gets up and everyone's jumping. It's immense.
Is he a good singer?
No, not at all. He's awful. But he gets into it, and there's confidence and there's passion there, so everyone loves it. The best singer, which is obviously, I'd probably say Stewie Pointer, he can hold a note. But he doesn't have the confidence of Cam Steele, so he's not the best karaoke. That's got to be Cam every time.
I just could not see Cam Steele going, "I can't get no sleep." Dun, 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 dun. I just can't see that at all. But there we go. I mean, again, something learned on tonight's episode of the Carrot Cricket Podcast. We're only three questions in. We've already had two bombshells. I mean, my word. Moving on to our next one then. Again, musically themed. Who's the team DJ up at Durham? And what is their choice of music?
Good question. I think, again, that depends on who gets connected to Bluetooth first. When I first started playing, Mark Wood always said he had the best, well, it was an iPod back then, he always said he had the best iPod in the UK. So he was adamant all of his music was the best. He'd have anything from 70s to cheesy pop to a little bit of R&B and whatnot. At the minute, in our winter training, a young lad, Ollie Gibson's been taking the reins, and he's actually been very good. He plays a bit of everything for everyone. But I want to sound really old when I say this, but a lot of the lads now put music on, which I've never heard of, and it makes my ears bleed. I just don't know what it is. So yeah, sometimes like you've just got to put your own earphones in and not listen to any of that. But I give Ollie Gibson a lot of credit. He's very good. He plays to the crowd. He tries to give a little bit of everything to everyone.
Fair enough. That's important, yeah. Isn't it? I know it's cliche, but variety is the spice of life. I mean, you can't just have the same old, same old. A lot of county cricketers who have come on the podcast. It's always the same, isn't it, Joe? Getting the drum and bass on. That's the classic one. Or rap. But yeah, it's good to have some variety. Of course, you've got to meet everyone's needs, don't you? In the dressing room. Keep everyone happy instead of just yourself on the speakers.
Yeah, definitely. So the next one then. Now, this applies for anything on a cricket field. Runs, wickets, catches, anything, or 50s, 100s, wickets, catches, anything like that. And that is, who has the best celebration?
Best celebration. For me, I'm quite like a plain celebration. So I think Rushy's is quite iconic. Just a single hand in the air, looks almost Alan Shearer-esque, which he'll hate me for saying because he's a Macam, but just it's quite modest. It's nothing too flashy. He's almost apologetic because he's took another wicket. He's took 1,000 every year. But I think that's quite simple and quite straightforward. Alex Lees has got his 100th celebration is really nice. He always looks up to the sky to his dad again, which is quite touching. So I think that's probably one that sticks out as well. It's something that means something, is better than people just run around and punch in the air and whatnot. So that's quite a nice celebration.
I'd agree with that one. Yeah, it's always nice when it has a meaning like that, of course. It does make them that bit more special. What about yourself though, Graham? Could we see any, I don't know, kind of special celebration? Let's say you get a big century this season, or, I don't know, a quick 80 in the T20 Blast.
If I got 100 in a first class game, you'd probably see me run into the stands now. The chances of that are pretty good. I'd probably give it a big one. But no, I'd like to think I'd be quite reserved with it again. I'm not one for trying to draw the attention too much to myself. So just sort of raise the bat and thank people for clapping. But Hopefully I get a chance to do it. That's the main thing.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, you got to score the runs first. You can't just be talking about celebrations and not backing it up. I was expecting like a Rob Jones-esque one, you know, just going absolutely crazy out in the middle.
Yeah, that was very good.
Everyone keeps talking about it, so fair play to him.
Oh no, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just iconic. It's an iconic celebration. I mean, we're still talking about it right now. It's just one of those brilliant pieces of county recent history, I suppose, that Rob Jones century. What a celebration. Moving on to our next question, though, Graham. Who do you say is the kit man's nightmare up at the Riverside? Whose kit's always laid all over the place?
It'd almost be easy to say whose isn't. Everyone just seems to... People go out with different training tops on every day, different shirts, because everyone's kit's just everywhere. It's honestly a nightmare. But the one that stands out is probably someone like Ben Ray. And when he gets into the change room as well, his clothes are off and he's just there in his skin. So his shirt's one side, his pants are another, his socks are somewhere else, and he's just sat there and his gloves and bats are everywhere. And it's just, you just lose track of what's yours and what's not, because everyone's kit's just spread out. It's honestly a nightmare. I don't know, and people's kits stink as well. It's awful. I mean, I'm probably one of the worst for it as well, but my kit stinks. But when you get another someone else's smell, it's disgusting.
Is it really that bad? Because when we usually have cricketers on the podcast, they've said, yeah, there's one or two, but for the most part, the dressing rooms are pretty tidy. What's it like at Durham? It's just absolute chaos.
It can be times, and people are quite superstitious with the kit as well. So some people will wear kits that never been washed. I mean, I can remember when I first started playing, Phil Mustard, his batting briefs, I don't think had been washed for about 15 years, and I don't even know how they were still held together. It was awful. And I don't even know how he put them on his body. The smell that was coming from them was something else. So, yeah, I think that's probably something we could get better at, as being a bit tidier and a bit more hygienic, but we're a bit old school in that sense.
I guess that's the way it is, isn't it? I guess that's the way it is. The next one then. Now, this is a bit of a new one. We've already asked it a couple of times, so it's relatively new. And that is, who's the best cook?
Best cook? Interesting one. There's probably a few guys we'll have to rule out, because since COVID, we've signed lads, and since COVID, we've never had a chance to experience it. But I know Alex Lees usually comes in the morning and you ask him when he had for dinner last night, and he says he's made something pretty spectacular and sounds like a lot of effort. And he's quite big in his food. He tries all these new restaurants and he tries it in the kitchen himself. So I reckon he's probably one of the better ones. And there's some guys you wouldn't trust making your toast as well. So there's two ends of the spectrum there.
Who do you say is the worst?
Fair enough.
Who would you say would appear on Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, for example?
I can't see Paul Coughlin cooking anything. He's one of those people as well, he can eat whatever he wants and doesn't put weight on. So you ask him what he had and he's had a takeaway or he's had something and you just think, I just can't see you standing in the kitchen making something. I don't think he has the patience for it, never mind the knowledge on how to make something.
We all know someone like that though, don't we? We all know someone like that who just tends to eat what they want and then they just look the same every single time as well.
It's so frustrating. And you have to watch what you eat to try and keep yourself right, and someone else can just go and do what they want and it's not even a food for them.
Yeah. I think everyone knows someone like that, though, don't we? Like, I don't know, a wonder to science. It's crazy. Moving on to our next one, though, very, very northeastern themes. And this is an absolute classic here on the County Cricket Podcast with the Durham Cricketers. Who do you say would be the most likely to appear on an episode of Geordie Shaw?
Oh, good question. I think Bryden Cass would be the one for that now. I think... since coming over from South Africa, he's really got into the Northeast spirit. And I'd say he'd be the one that would feature heavily. He probably wouldn't want it because he's now an adopted Macam as well. He loves Sunderland. But he would fit the type of character that would go on to the Geordie Shaw.
Yeah, fair enough. Is that something we're ever likely to see at the end of his playing career?
Well,
or even Joran.
You never even know. Joran. Hopefully he has a long career where he doesn't have to stoop that low after it.
Would make for good TV, though, seeing Bryden Cass on Geordie.
It would. And some good banter in the dressing room as well.
Oh, yeah.
Some very good banter in the dressing room, I should imagine.
100%.
Yeah. So moving on to the penultimate one then. Who is the best footballer? Now, I don't know if you've been able to play football recently because of COVID and also some counties don't like their players playing football anymore. But who is the best footballer?
Yeah, the football's kind of gone out out the window a little bit, but it has already been said, but Paul Coughlin is very, very good. I don't know if you've seen him field, but he's one of the fastest runners you'll ever see, and he just covers ground on a football field so easily, and he's got a decent first touch. So, I mean, if you've got a decent first touch in a cricket team, you're generally one of the better ones, because most lads have got two left feet. But he'd probably be the standout. Ben Rain actually fancies himself a little bit as a footballer, but he's not very good. His claim to fame is that a current England bowler once called him a fat mess during a game, and he took that to say the fat Messi. So you think he compares himself to Lionel Messi. But I don't think it could be any further from the truth, that.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. You back your ability. If he backs his ability.
Oh, he's confident, but I think if you sat in room bed, you'd be worried.
Fair enough.
Absolutely. What about Mark Wood, though? Surely Woody. I mean, Woody, when he kicks the ball onto the stump, shouts Shearer.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. To be fair, Woody would be up there, because he just plays at the back. He's nothing flash, but he'd get an 8 out of 10 rating every time. Plays at the back, pulls the strings, can pick a pass, but doesn't go for the glory, stand up front and try and score a few goals.
It's interesting that, though, Mark Wood. Because I would have pictured him like right winger or left winger, or just someone like gunning up and down the wings.
In the thick of things.
Yeah. Hmm. Not like an enforcer who's got like that Mesut Ozil vision. Yeah, Grim, who do you say is the worst footballer? We'll flip that on its head. Who do you say has absolutely zero football skills?
any of the South Africans. It's incredible. I mean, luckily he's left now, but when Keaton Jennings was here, it was a sight to build. It was like he had clown shoes on. I just don't know.
I've seen Keaton Jennings play football in just when I've been watching a warm-up at Old Trafford. He's not the best player I've ever seen, I'll be honest. So,
for someone who's got great hand-eye coordination, his bottom half just must have a different brain, and it just doesn't work, because he's awful. But a lot of the South Africans, yeah, that have come over usually struggle. I keep mentioning Brydon Carse as well. He loves his football, and again, his legs just almost like they're not part of his body when he's trying to play. They just go everywhere. He once got banned from playing because he nearly injured Mark Stoneman in a game. So they banned him from playing for a few weeks.
Seriously?
Yeah, he's like, his arms and legs were going everywhere, and I think he just lost a little bit of control. He gets too excited, like everyone does. It's a great way to start a day, by getting in that competitive juices going. And sometimes you just get a little bit too excited and you lose track of what you're actually there to do. You get sight on the ball and you just want to win.
Oh, fair enough.
How did you tackle him?
Above the knee almost, I think.
What? Oh, that's dirty.
In a non-contact game of football, it was quite brutal.
Jeez.
Straight red.
I thought you were going to say like a normal slide tackle or a two-foot. I mean, a two-foot tackle, that would have been pretty severe. But
it was definitely unintentional. He was trying to just kick the ball, but because, like I say, his legs have got a mind of their own, he just missed the ball completely and went for the shins.
Jeez. Tell you what, wouldn't want to face Brydon Carse in a game of football.
He has got better now. He's watched a lot of Sunderland players, so he's starting to understand how to touch a ball and pass one, so he's not as bad as what he once was.
Well, there we go. Who knows? One day could see Brydon with some techers. Who knows? Who knows what the future will behold? But moving on to our final question of today's podcast, then, Graham. Again, very sporty, this question. Who do you say is the best golfer up at Durham?
Best golfer? Good question. I mean, it was Paul Collingwood while he was here.
Loves his golf, doesn't he, Collie?
His golf. I think he plays a two. Just like his cricket, just solid, just hits the ball straight. Never drifts too far away from the fairway. Knocks on the green, puts it in. Pretty simple game for him. I think we've still got a few decent players. I think Scott Borthwick's pretty good. I think he'll play off about 10 or 12. And then the young lad who I mentioned before, Ollie Gibson, I think he's nearly off scratch, actually. He's one of those people that just tries his hand at anything, I think, and he's pretty good at it. I think he's nearly a scratch golfer. So I'd say him. But to be honest with you, I'm not much of a golfer myself these days, so I haven't seen many of the lads on the course. But like most teams, there's generally 50% or more that do play, but they're the names that stick out.
Yeah, that is a good point with regards to county cricket. Every single county, I mean, to be fair, that last question is usually a very prestigious one. Like every single cricketer wants to be called the best golfer. I don't know why they're intrinsically connected, but yeah, fair play. fair play. That's impressive. Ollie Gibson as well. Almost off scratch. That's excellent for someone so young. It really is.
Usually fast bowlers as well, which surprises me. Fast bowlers are usually quite good at golf, which I can't get my head around, because sometimes you watch them hold a bat and you think, well, how can you hit a golf ball when you don't know which end of the bat to hold?
Well, to be fair, I suppose the golf ball isn't moving.
That's true.
All you have to do is, well, quite literally tee off.
Hit a cricket ball off a tee. Yeah, easier.
might boost the average heading into 2021 and beyond. But that does bring us to an end to today's teammate segment. And of course, it brings us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast as a whole. So, Graham, before we end today's show, do you have anything to just plug or promote? Any social media channels, for example?
No, nothing really. I'm not very active on social media. Try and keep quiet on that. Maybe the odd picture of my dog now and again on Instagram, but as a whole, keep quiet. So I just want to say thanks for having me on.
Graham, it's our absolute pleasure. Of course, we've loved talking all things county cricket. The teammate segment as well. That's quite funny. Had some very, very unique answers, to say the least, in the teammate segment. And of course, you're always welcome back on during the summer. And fingers crossed you get some big runs. I mean, we'd love to see you score some centuries. As I said, get the celebrations out. Fingers crossed. And we wish you the best heading into this season. And of course, beyond that as well. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.